Farm Credit is honored to coordinate the Rebuild Rural Coalition. Just a brief background, as Barb indicated, we've had Farm Credit started coordinating this in 2017. We have 260 national, state, and local organizations all over the country. And the premise was, if you think back, way back, 2016, the presidential election campaign, then Secretary Clinton, then candidate Trump, were both talking about the importance of renewed infrastructure investment. We thought that was terrific, but we also recognized that there was a dearth and needed to be a focus on rural infrastructure. It's not that urban infrastructure needs are not important. As I sit here in my basement in Washington, D.C., we've got to have it wherever we live. However, for rural communities, there are a lot of needs that are unique and that we really need to focus on. And so from that in sort of the early days of 2016, we started the coalition in 2017. It's amazing that 4+ years later, from a Washington standpoint, the coalition is alive and well. The coalition is organized broadly around these categories, and it's really neat today. You're going to be hearing, particularly, we'll have an opportunity to focus particularly on ag research, broadband, transportation, a little bit of healthcare from our panelists. You know, you could argue certainly that there are other areas that are important here, but generally speaking, for our Rebuild Rural Coalition partners, these 8 buckets, if you will, have been well understood as priorities for the coalition. In terms of what's been going on in terms of coalition activities, we've really tried to organize ourselves around meetings with policymakers, House or Senate, certainly with the current administration. We just sent a letter to President Biden that was co-signed by over 220 of our coalition partners. We've already gotten positive feedback from the current administration, and we're really excited. We're going to have a coalition briefing with the White House and also APLU, which we'll get a chance to talk about later. And then, you know, frankly, I've just been doing, calling a lot of attention to the rural infrastructure issues that have been out there. Much like for rural communities, it doesn't matter if you've got a D or an R behind your name. If there are infrastructure issues that are involved in your local communities, we want to hear from you and we want to hear what you have to say. So we've been really pleased about the bipartisan level of engagement. We've had a lot of social media activities. We certainly appreciate NASDA's robust involvement, certainly on just using our hashtag Rebuild Rural, engaging with members of Congress when they're involved in rural infrastructure issues. And then, you know, in terms of what we're expecting, and we'll have a chance during the discussion to get into this, lots of opportunity here for infrastructure. As you all know, certainly after we get through the reconciliation, the COVID stimulus process, certainly strong signals coming out of Capitol Hill and the administration that infrastructure is next on the table. You could sort of chuckle to yourself about here comes another infrastructure week. We're certainly expecting that, but hopefully a real opportunity on an issue like infrastructure to really galvanize both parties here to get something done. And you know, I guess to wrap things up as we head into introductions, when you think about infrastructure and Max, we'll talk about in a few minutes with National Grain and Feed, certainly surface transportation, people think about that. That's certainly issues that we all care about, but certainly things related to broadband, with rural health care, with housing, you can see just the sheer number of committees that could be involved in an infrastructure package is enormous. So we're expecting lots of potential activity and movement on Capitol Hill. So with that, let me segue to the most important part here and introduce our panelists. And I'm going to go in order of their presentations. First, I'd like to introduce Dr. Doug Steele. He's Vice President for Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resources for the Association of Public and Land Grant Universities. Dr. Steele was appointed to his current position in January of 2019. Through collaborative partnerships, he focuses on broad cross-cutting issues related to agriculture, food and fiber, forestry, human sciences, natural resources. He's also APLU through the board on agricultural assembly, advocates yearly on behalf of agricultural research, extension, and education funding. He has extensive prior experience. He's held positions at Texas A&M, Colorado State, Montana State, Purdue University. He's at the national level. He's been extremely active, particularly in the National 4-H Council. He's former chairman of the board of directors, a trustee, as well as won numerous awards, and is not too far away from geographically from where our family lives. He's in Bowie, Maryland with his wife, Lori, and they have four grown children and one grandchild. So welcome, Doug Steele. And then I'm going to go ahead and introduce the other two panelists. Max Fisher is Vice President of Economics and Government Relations at National Grain and Feed Association. Max joined NGFA in 2013 after serving as the chief economist for the Senate Agriculture Committee, which he worked for Senator Pat Roberts from Kansas. He received his undergraduate degree in agricultural business from Kansas State University and has a master's degree in agricultural economics from Texas A&M University. So welcome to Max, who, by the way, does a great job coordinating agricultural transportation working group along with the American Farm Bureau Federation. And finally, a pleasure of introducing Matt Wollum, who leads state government affairs for Lando Lakes, a farmer-owned cooperative that does business in all 50 states. Matt has over 20 years of experience working on state and federal policy. Prior to his service with Lando Lakes, he served 7.5 years within the executive leadership team at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture as Assistant Commissioner for Agriculture, and was later promoted to Deputy Commissioner of Agriculture. He's held multiple positions on Capitol Hill and also in the Minnesota Senate, and should say in the House and the Senate in Washington as well. He's also, since 2003, has been the fifth generation owner and operator of his family's farming operation in southwestern Minnesota, where he grows corn and soybeans. So with that, I just think you all are in for a great treat here. And Doug, I may turn things over to you for your introductory or opening remarks, I should say.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone, and maybe good morning to some of you. I want to first off congratulate Dr. Glenn, the NASDA leadership of the Planning Committee, for moving to a virtual winter board meeting. Many of us have had that experience right now, and it's no small feat to get this done. And participation in these sessions have been tremendous, and thank you, Barb, for your leadership. You know, I think we're all here together, and I'm honored to serve on this panel talking about an issue that's very critical and important to all of us, and that is our rural communities, which are supported by rural infrastructure. And I have a mindset that we need to be on just trying to help these rural communities survive and put them in a position to thrive, to recognize their contributions to the United States, to our economy, and especially to the food production services that we all require. Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities is a system of 244 public and land-grant universities, of which almost 100 of them are colleges of agriculture. In your traditional 1862 universities, our 1890 historically black colleges and universities, our 1994 tribal colleges and universities, and our Hispanic serving institutions. We also have a series of non-land grant colleges of agriculture that are also part of our association, virtually having a footprint across the whole country. And obviously our partnership in many of our states with our state departments of agriculture is critical in our collaborations for success. So let's talk about a situation that we probably already know exists, an aging infrastructure. And many of us can relate to this when you try to keep buildings and mortar, bricks and mortar put together, but how does this relate to our colleges of agriculture and our ag research infrastructure? We are challenged right now that almost 37% of our square foot capacity is over 50 years old. We are reaching a critical point in time in our history of ag infrastructure research. It's not possible to repair anymore. We're really talking about tear down and rebuilding, especially to meet the critical needs we have now in looking at the climate research, soil health, and many of the areas we're called on to respond to needs across the world that we're facing today. And so we need to understand that this will not get better, it will only get worse, and we can no longer afford to stop putting off these investments in a rural infrastructure package for ag research. So this is no surprise to anybody. In 2015, APLU conducted a study with a infrastructure group called Sightline, and that report said, if you looked at all the infrastructure at our land-grant universities, we have about an $8.4 billion deficiency in deferred maintenance. Well, over the last 5 years, we refreshed that study last September, and that $8.4 billion has now grown into $11.5 billion. And the cost to replace that square footage also is rising at the same time. So we have a eroding ag infrastructure. We have an immediate investment to also renew and replace in many cases. And investments in capital infrastructure across our colleges and schools will have incredible impacts for our ag producers, ag community. So why invest in ag research? Our ag economists tell us that for every $10 to $20 invested in ag research, for every $1 invested in ag research, we see a benefit of $10 to $20. Investing in food and ag research will increase our sustainability and productivity over time. Our current level of spending for ag research and extension programs are at the same level that we had in 1980. So in real dollars, we have lost capacity over time. Ag infrastructure and research is an investment that benefits farms of all sizes, all commodity groups, all of our communities, and helps stimulate that local economy and global economic growth. And maybe one of the main factors we need to be aware of, in 2016 alone, China has now outspent the United States in agriculture investment by nearly $3 billion. In fact, we are no longer even in the top five in ag research R&D in the world anymore. So what can we do about it? Well, we've got to cultivate this new era for ag research to address the many concerns that are brought before us in our communities. A strategic investment in ag research will help us catch up with our deferred maintenance costs and help us prepare also for the future. So currently the infrastructure is supporting current activities, but as we see every day, there are more and more research needed in the agricultural sector to help us be more competitive. And we don't want to lose our standing as really the world leader in ag innovation. And many countries and their investments are putting us at risk of losing that. And the other good thing about when you talk about investment in our infrastructure is it can provide an estimated 20,000 jobs. This is the immediate construction jobs in rural communities. This does not include the jobs that can be added to our research portfolio with that investment. So with that, I just want to thank you for attending the session today. I want to express my appreciation to our State Departments of Agriculture. Your work with our land-grant universities are very important, and I know we have long-term collaborative partnerships that have yielded great results over the years, and I'm looking forward to the future together.